Welcome to Fresh Research, a podcast from the nonprofit Times. We explore some of the most interesting and sometimes provocative findings focused on the world of nonprofits. Thanks for tuning in. Here at the nonprofit Times, we see tons of great, fresh research. So in each episode, we take a recent study or survey and have a conversation with the authors about what they found and why they think it's important for charities. We'll also give away some books and give you access to other valuable information from the nonprofit Times.
More than 45,000 nonprofits are dedicated to women and girls, and they receive about $6.3 billion in charitable contributions. That comprises about 3.3% of all charities and 1.6% of overall giving in the U.S. Is that a lot? A little? We'll delve into those questions and more in this episode when we welcome Tessa Skidmore. She's visiting research associate at the Women's Philanthropy Institute. She was the writer and project manager for the Women and Girls Index, measuring giving to women's and girls' causes, a report from the Women's Philanthropy Institute at Indiana University's Lilly Family School of Philanthropy. Welcome to the program, Tessa. I appreciate it.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're calling this a groundbreaking study because it's the first one to look at solely women and girls. What was the impetus behind creating this kind of report?
Yeah, so essentially our goal was to be able to look at women's and girls' causes as their own nonprofit subsector and be able to compare women's and girls' causes to other charitable subsectors like education or health or arts. And this interest was really driven by a demand from donors, nonprofits, researchers for this information. Much of our research on giving to women's and girls' causes up to this point has focused on the donor side of the equation and who gives to these causes and why. But with this report, we really wanted to be able to quantify these organizations and to create a really systematic, comprehensive index of their characteristics and how much charitable giving they receive.
And where would women and girls as a subsector fall among others?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, women's and girls' causes make up 3.3% of all charitable organizations and 1.6% of all charitable giving. And compared to other nonprofit sectors, subsectors, this is quite small. So the largest nonprofit subsector is religion, and the smallest is the environment. And so women's and girls' organizations make up about half of the amount of charitable giving that the smallest subsector, the environment, receives, and only about 5% of the charitable giving that the largest subsector, so religious organizations, receive.
And women's and girls' causes, do they go through all those sectors? Are they found within, say, religion and an environment? Can you give me an example of, say, like a what would be an environmental organization that would also then fall into women's and girls?
Yeah, so that was one of the findings of our study, was that indeed these organizations can be found in every nonprofit subsector. Actually, religion and environment are some of the subsectors where there's a smaller number of women's and girls organizations. The most tend to be concentrated in human services, in terms of both number of organizations and amount of charitable giving they receive.
A prime example would be something like Planned Parenthood, would be or YWCA, things that are focused solely on women's and girls.
Yes. So as far as subsectors go, YWCA would be a great example of one in the human services subsector. Planned Parenthood falls into the health subsector. But in general, I think you raise a good point, is how are we defining women's and girls' organizations? Because the boundaries about that maybe aren't quite as concrete as one might imagine. So that was one of the first things we had to decide upon in conducting this research, was how were these organizations going to be defined? And we narrowed it down to two main criteria, which is, first, that the organization is dedicated to primarily serving women and girls. So YWCA and Planned Parenthood is a great example of that. You know, women's and girls are their main program participants or clients, what have you. And the other criteria, which makes up a smaller portion of the organizations, is the index also includes organizations that are collectives of women and girls that serve more general philanthropic purposes. So something like that would be Junior League, because it's a group of women engaged in philanthropy. They may not grant all of their dollars to women's and girls' causes, but women are very heavily involved in that organization and sort of exists for their purposes.
So for instance, a food bank that's specific for women and girls, which I don't know if they're one that exists, but that would be, as opposed to say a general food bank, wouldn't be part of that.
Right, right. So there, for example, are something that might tie into that is there are homeless shelters specifically meant for women and children, and they may provide food or other basic assistance to women and their families. And organizations like that would be included in the index.
So the largest portion of women and girls' causes are found within, I think you said, human services. Do they also receive the biggest portion of charitable contributions?
Yes. For human services, in terms of number of organizations, that is a little over a third, so about 36%. And then in terms of charitable dollars, it's a little bit lower, but still around a third at 32%. But another interesting nuance of the research is that first we looked at the subsectors, but then we also decided that we should look at mission as well, because it's not always the case that, you know, mission neatly aligns with subsector. So when we looked at mission specifically, for mission, we just looked at charitable dollars, not number of organizations. But with that, we found that health-related organizations received the most giving, both those focused on health more generally and those focused on reproductive health, like Planned Parenthood.
So the largest subsector for women's and girls' causes is human services, about 36% of mm-hmm. women's and girls' causes. Is that far and away the biggest, or is there, what are some of the other larger or prominent subsectors?
Yeah. So I mentioned that health was really large when we look specifically at mission focus, and it also is large when we look at subsector. It's the next largest after human services. And it's interesting because health organizations, they tend to be larger based on the services that they provide. So they're not quite as large as human services in terms of number of organizations, but they're the next largest in terms of charitable dollars received. And they make up about 25%. Of the charitable giving to women's and girls' causes in terms of subsector.
So between those two, human services and health, it's really more than half of the women and girls subsector, which I guess kind of makes sense when you think about it.
Yep.
But on average, most of these organizations are smaller than other nonprofits, whether it's revenue, expenses, assets, and all that. Is that good or bad? Or is that just the fact how it is that these are smaller local organizations?
We looked at first at, you know, the typical financial measures of revenue, assets, expenses, but then we also thought it was important to look beyond that to other measures of capacity. And that's what led us to look at the amount spent on employee compensation and benefits and also the number of employees. And we found pretty consistently across the board that these organizations are smaller. And I wouldn't say that it's bad. It's just sort of the nature of these organizations. And I think up to this point, we haven't really had this type of information. So it serves as a baseline, really, for being able to determine whether they're growing, you know, how these organizations are evolving. It's hard to understand those types of trends without having this baseline.
We'll be right back with more on the Women's and Girls Index and how donor-advised funds fit into all this right after this.
If you like what you're hearing, share it with friends and colleagues on social media. Use the hashtag #FreshResearch or retweet the Nonprofit Times link, and you'll be eligible to win a book from the NPT Library. Another way for folks to find the show, rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Congratulations to this month's winner, Audrey Walker, Corporate Relations Director at the United Way of Southeastern Michigan in Detroit. Thanks for listening and thanks for sharing the podcast.
If you're interested in nonprofit events and news, then consider checking out the Whole Whale podcast. For over 5 years, we've covered topics related to marketing, technology, and communications in the social impact space. Recently, we've covered things like tackling Facebook fundraising, why you shouldn't build that mobile app, and why right now is the best time to start your capital campaign. So find us using the Whole Whale on whatever podcast app that you choose to use.
Welcome back. We're talking to Tessa Skidmore of the Women's Philanthropy Institute and its recent report, the Women's and Girls Index. One of the more interesting perspectives in the study I found was where donor-advised funds fit into all this. The percentage of overall giving going to women's and girls' causes was more like 3.3%, but there seemed to be a higher proportion of donor-advised funds going to women's and girls' causes. Is there anything that might explain that, or is it just a matter of this being the first report where we don't really have context yet on that?
Yeah. So how that particular finding came about is interesting, because that wasn't initially something we were planning to explore in our original analyses for this report, but we wanted to demonstrate the other types of research that are possible with the data in this index. Really can do lots of different analyses on organization level data for nonprofits. And so we wanted to provide a concrete example of how this information can be used, and organization level data on donor advised funds grants were data that we had that we could use as an example. And in doing that, we did find a very interesting figure with regards to the share of donor advised fund grant dollars going to women and girls being almost twice as large as the share of overall philanthropic giving going to women and girls. So that finding too is sort of like a baseline. We'll need to have data from multiple years to really see a trend. But with the donor advised fund data, we do have data from 2012, 2013, 2014, and 2015. And there does seem to be an upward trend in the percentage of dollars going to women's and girls organizations.
And you mentioned this is the first report, so it's more of a baseline, and it does not include some of the more recent women's movements, I guess you could call it, or like, for instance, Time's Up or the Me Too movement, because that generated quite a pop in charitable contributions. I remember GoFundMe, one of their largest campaigns was for the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund last year. I think that raised more than $22 million and was one of the most successful campaigns. $22 million obviously isn't going to be that big of a drop in the bucket compared to the billions. But these data don't include that yet. This is from 2016, is that right?
Right. So that is a perfect example of why it's important to have this baseline so we can measure trends moving forward, because we know people are going to be interested in how those current events and the momentum of these movements may have moved the needle in terms of charitable giving.
How often would you expect the report to be updated? Is it quarterly, yearly, biannually?
We are planning to update the data on an annual basis. We are not sure whether we will release a report as comprehensive as this one every year. It might be more like a research brief, but we are planning to make this an ongoing project to update the analyses in the report and then continue to make this information available to other researchers.
Is there any way to go back and compile numbers? I know this is the baseline, but I'm thinking if there are other, if you take the same data or the same sources and they have the same those sources for previous years, does that make sense?
Yes, that could be an option. You know, we're just beginning to explore what all the possibilities are with this data and what sorts of other analyses we're interested in conducting. While we do anticipate being able to see some trends, it can be difficult with this data because organizations are constantly coming in and out of the sample as some organizations may dissolve and new ones may be formed, but certainly still possible to see some general patterns.
What would you say are some of the big takeaways for nonprofits in this report, whether it's a women and girls focused organization or just generally, what should fundraisers or nonprofit executives take away from this report?
Yeah, there's a few different takeaways. First for researchers, this is publicly accessible data. So anyone who's interested in doing various forms of analysis is encouraged to do so. And then for practitioners, donors and fundraisers, we see this as a way for them to better understand organizations in this space and what their characteristics are and what some of the challenges and opportunities that they face, and to maybe use it as a benchmarking tool for women's and girls organizations to see where they fit in within the larger context of groups that focus on this population.
Did the results surprise you in any way? Was the number smaller than you expected, bigger? Is it good or bad?
I think that people have been wanting this number for a long time, and there really hasn't been a number that has measured all types of charitable giving, individuals, foundations, corporations. So a lot of the research has been presenting a number for foundation giving to women's and girls' causes from a Foundation Center report from 2009, and that number was a bit higher. So I feel like people who are really deep into this space may think, oh, that's smaller than the foundation's number I've been seeing, but maybe not realize that they're looking at different things. In the larger nonprofit community and just with the public more broadly, I don't think people really had an idea of what this looked like. So I think it sort of depends on from what angle you're looking at it.
Well, we'll see where it goes from there. It could go up or down, and it might be more or less when the updates come.
Right. And I think it is another important distinction between this number and, previous similar numbers that have been circulating, is that we really used a relatively narrow definition of women's and girls organizations. We were really focused on organizations that were entirely dedicated or almost entirely dedicated to women and girls, versus other numbers have accounted for or attempted to account for all spending on women's and girls causes, even if that organization may not be entirely focused on that population. So that's another important distinction to be aware of.
Just going back to the donor advised fund aspect of it, is there anything you can take away from that number where that proportion is rising the last few years of giving to women's and girls' causes? And because I know my first thought is donor advised funds tend to be probably more affluent donors, and more affluent donors tend to be more female, I think, than your average donor. Anything you can read into that?
Yeah. I think that we found this particular finding to be a bit more forward-looking, because we know that donor-advised funds are making up an increasing share of overall philanthropy. So to see that women's and girls organizations comprise a larger portion of donor-advised funds grants seems to indicate maybe where the sector is heading, looking more towards the other vehicles through which people are now giving beyond the traditional mechanisms. So I think the donor advised fund number really allows us to look at these different vehicles instead of all giving sort of as a homogenous unit.
Anything else that nonprofits should know about from this report? Anything that flew under the radar that you'd want to point out, or anything that didn't make the headline but is interesting, should be interesting to a nonprofit executive?
Yeah, I mean, just one of our takeaways as the Women's Philanthropy Institute, understanding this information, we've really found that these organizations seem to be doing a lot with a little. We've been able to see, even though it was a different time period than the time period we were looking at, but organizations like the organization associated with the Time's Up movement and other organizations to really be able to leverage a movement to advance a cause. And so we're seeing this as, look at how much organizations are able to do with just 1.6% of overall charitable giving. You know, imagine what they could do if we increase that share of the pie even a little bit. And, you know, I think it also got us thinking about all the different ways that people advance causes. You know, we're seeing a lot of attention to women's and girls' issues, but, you know, some of it is through advocacy and other mechanisms besides traditional charitable giving. So, you know, helping make donors and fundraisers aware that charitable giving to nonprofits is another way to advance these causes and show your support, in addition to other means of spreading the word.
Well, Tessa, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. We had a really good discussion about this.
Yes, thank you so much again for having me. I enjoyed talking to you.
That's Tessa Skidmore. She's a visiting research associate at the Women's Philanthropy Institute and the project manager of the Women and Girls Index. For more details on that, check out the story notes in our podcast page. And thanks for joining us. I'm Mark Rivna for the Nonprofit Times, and check back next month for a new episode.
That's our episode for today. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to share the Fresh Research link on Twitter or Facebook to be eligible to win something from the NPT Library. You can also share on social media with the hashtag #FreshResearch. And if you like what you hear, please rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. This has been Fresh Research, a podcast from the Nonprofit Times, spotlighting research and trends in the philanthropic sector. Till next time, keep up with us at thenonprofittimes.com for all your nonprofit news.